The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 4th of June, 2019. On the podcast today, I have James Draper, Chief Executive Officer of Bidstack, BIDS. And James talks about Ian Hetherington, John Epstein, and Nav Sunna, who have joined the company's advisory board. Also on the podcast, Jeremy Martin, Chief Executive Officer of Horizonte Minerals. And Jeremy discusses the high purity cobalt and nickel sulfate at their Vermelho project in northern Brazil. And I have Chris Jeffries, Chief Executive Officer of Dev Clever Holdings, DEV, sticker there. And Chris provides an update on their cloud-based gamification platform, Engage, which was launched on March the 6th. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, and it's worth looking at them. Just look at the companies being followed, you know, and the companies being liked. It says a lot. It's a very powerful metric. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk. By the way, if you do use our app, the Vox Markets app, it's free of charge, of course, to download. But if you get some value from that, which I'm sure you do if you download it and use it, then please give us a rating and review at the store you're at, the app store you're at, so Android or iPhone. And that way, other people searching for investment apps will find our app there. That would be much appreciated.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Draper, CEO of Bidstack, BIDS is ticker. James, thanks for joining me.
Absolute pleasure, as always.
There'll be a lot of people, when I ask this question, say, what are you asking this question for? But you'd be surprised. I mean, I had someone, almost, I think last month, asking me if I know who Bidstack were. So, for James, for people who are sort of new to the podcast, new to investing, just give them a quick summary as to what Bidstack do, please.
Sure. So, in short, we are like a Jason & Co. or Clear Channel within the exploding video game market. So, what I mean by that is that, historically, video game developers, when they've been creating environments, whether it be football stadia, virtual cities, whatever it might be, you know, in NBA, NFL, anything, most sports, they would put trackside or pitchside billboards within the environment to try and make it feel more authentic. Historically, those advertising slots have been hard-coded. What it means is that if you're playing in the UK or the States or Japan, wherever you're playing the game, you're all seeing exactly the same adverts because it's just part of the scenery. What our technology does, it basically takes control of those assets, and depending on the demographic of the gamer themselves, we show different content. So it basically means that the advertisers get more bang per buck, and it means that from a video game perspective, a game developer perspective, it's a source of additional revenue for them. So without ruining the artwork. So it's a very exciting new advertising category.
Yeah. And of course, you reckon, in fact, we're going to E3 and streaming in a bit. But first of all, let's start off with the news that you announced late Friday, just after March close. Advisory board members signed up. So you've got, I think, six now, is it? But I mean, the last ones was Ian Hetherington, Nav Sunna, and John Epstein. So let's go through those. Ian Hetherington, I did read through that, and when I read this RNS, I stopped my tracks. The amount of I've never heard the guy. I'm not a huge gamer, to be honest, but I mean, it's obviously he is a legend in his field. And just take us through why you got him on board. It's obviously pretty why, but from your perspective, please, if you could.
Yeah, sure. So, Ian, we've been talking to for about 6 or 7 months now. He is, along with a guy called Ian Livingston, who's a linked to Sumo. Ian, they are very much seen as the two very well-respected voices of the UK gaming scene over the last like 20, 25 years. Ian Hetherington, I've been a huge fan of what he achieved when he was at Psygnosis. His work there was incredible. He was the first-party game studio which Sony acquired. He's got a brilliant story, and I think we're going to do a write-up and put it up on our website, actually, of his sort of the history of the Sony PlayStation. He was actually flown out to Japan by Sony to see their first attempt at what the PlayStation 1 was going to be. And he was, I think it's fair to say, he was unimpressed and assisted in the sort of formation of the very first PlayStation 1, was an MD there. He's created things like Evolution Studios, who are another big game developer that create things like Drive Club and some amazing content. He's a very strong strategic thinker. So he's been fantastic for me, actually, and Francesco, for us sort of sense check a number of pieces with regards to the workings of programmatic within a video game environment, where the money flows between a game developer and a platform like a Sony PlayStation, where the cuts are, what type of information we can extract from the game engines themselves on scale. It's been absolutely magnificent for me. We've been wanting to get him involved in some sort of formal basis. So on Friday afternoon last week, we got pen to paper. So obviously we pushed the announcement out. But he's one of the best guys I've ever come across to brainstorm with. His thought process is what drove Sony's first party content forward in the early stages. So, you know, Wipeout 2097 in particular, for me, was such a breakthrough game. If you compare that back to back with like a, what was the previous generation, like a Mega Drive or a Super Nintendo, like that, it was the first title I saw that completely blew me away. And he's so, so well connected. He's got friends who, you know, the guys who alongside himself, like, created the original GTA. Obviously an enormous franchise. He knows the guys now extremely well, as in they are best friends who have landed at companies such as Epic, for example. So he is remarkably useful for us.
And how did you come about? Did you just chase him down? What happened there? How did you get in contact with him?
It came through Mark Alila, actually. Mark Alila is one of the old FitBug, the old previous company, one of the directors from there. He knew of Ian. He then suggested we meet, and we just took our time. We took 6 months to really sort of get to know each other. I class Ian as a friend now. He's been extremely helpful to me. It's been a lovely, detailed process we've gone through, and he's just been remarkably helpful.
Yeah. So let's move on to John Epstein. You can see why Ian's involved there, because all round sort of gaming guru here. But John Epstein's he's a serial entrepreneur. He's also been into programmatic advertising before. So what happened there? Tell us about that. And how you in it? What's he doing there?
So he was the president and CEO of Double Fusion. So in the late 2000s. As 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, around a sort of run-up period, there was a real sort of race to try and do in-game native advertising. So it was Double Fusion, IGA, in-game advertising, and Massive Inc. that were rushing against each other to try and sort up that market. Now, that market was actually pre-programmatic.
Okay.
It was pre smartphones getting any type of penetration on scale at that particular time. So, you know, the likes of the Kings, the Machine Zones, their Zingers were so embryonic at that particular time. It was, there wasn't the reach, there wasn't the way in which you can buy the advertising space that you can through programmatic now. So it was very labor intensive. So John, what I like and what I wanted to do is, particularly with this advisory board, is put people around me that have done incredible things and also tried to do incredible things, have been like absolutely, you know, we call ourselves first mover, but to be honest with you, like the Massive Inks, the John Epsteins of this world, the Double Fusion, you know, they were proper huge trailblazers themselves. They were just too early. The market just wasn't ready for it. So having his advice around me has been fantastic. He's based over in States. He's very, very well known across Silicon Valley. So when I've been going over there, he's been remarkably helpful in terms of setting up meetings for us. He knows, if you look at the people he used to work alongside, our good friend Frank over the CEO at Codemasters used to work with John over at Double Fusion. And someone who, because I'm a keen reader of the forums as well. One name that's definitely not been sort of picked up yet was one of the people who used to work at Double Fusion, who's a lady called Julie Schumacher, not spelt like Michael, but Julie is head of Unity Ads, and that's an incredibly useful connection for us as well going forward. And John is so well liked. He's so good at raising money. He's a great storyteller. He's one of the brightest guys I've ever come across. So he's it's an absolute honour to have him as part of the Bidstack sort of group. And on top of that, he's been extremely useful for us in the build up to E3 as well.
Yeah. I mean, on the end of his RNS, you mentioned that he is sort of an authority in that area. There's lots of speeches, conferences, and people regard him quite highly. Let's move on to Nav then. So he's the legal. Anything you want in the gaming industry, he specializes, doesn't he, in this area?
The Navatron, yes. Yeah. So he calls himself the business development machine, if you go to his one-page website, which is, yeah. He's been a remarkable friend to the company for the last 2 years. So when we started doing the pivot into the world of video games, he put together our first contract with Sports Interactive. I think I came across him through LinkedIn. I think I just randomly contacted him, and he's been a really good friend. He's one of the best networkers I've ever met. He is extremely well-liked, in particular in the UK gaming scene. If you want to get to anyone in the UK gaming scene, you go to Nav. He is going to E3 with us. He knows where all the places you should be at various different times during the course of the days and evenings to meet the right people. He's a fantastic networker. He is an M&A specialist lawyer as well, so you can imagine that's quite interesting to us, depending on where the future may take us. So there is a whole bunch of very exciting pieces that he can bring to the party, and also he's a fascinating guy to try and explain the video game space and the legals around the video game space to an investor, for example. So when we go down to, we're going to do this event probably now, I think we're probably most likely going to do it in sort of August, September time, so I can really showcase enough information and without sort of worry of any potential competitor having a look at what it is and trying to mobilise. I think by that stage we'll be so far out front. Good luck to them trying to chase us down from that position. So I'll get Nav to do a little bit of a presentation, probably John as well. We'll get Will over, and by that point, who knows, there might be some more board members and bits and pieces as well, so it could be quite an exciting event.
Yeah, well, last week on the podcast, you mentioned Control and Control of Destiny a little bit. Because, I said, when you are sort of in the first mover advantage space, and like I said, margins can be big, there can be lots of money can be earned there, but you have to sort of protect that. Of course, competitors will want to come in and have a slice of that pie. So, is Nav sort of involved in that control and the legal side of it, or what?
Yes, he is. He's a contributor towards that. I would say when it comes to the control element, what we want to do over a longer period of time, I generally feel that what's going to happen over the next few months, it's exactly what happened when the smartphone started to really sort of pick up and start to make decent penetration into the mobile space, and what that did for the video game sector then. I think we're about to go for that era again, but I think it'll be far bigger this time. If you think about it, that the markets that it will enable high fidelity gaming to get at that previously were just almost economically impossible stroke difficult. You know, if you can unlock some countries that have never been able to, on any type of scale, get to high fidelity gaming, they can't afford it, or it said, you know, the idea of buying a console or a gaming PC is just doesn't fit at all in with it, with many lifestyles in various different parts of the world, when survival is more important. But a lot of people have got, smartphone penetration is so enormous now, it's going to do something incredible to the video game space. I genuinely feel that, and I would say that it's not trying to sound like I'm trying to ramp Bidstack. I'm just saying, as a video game market as a whole, I think it's going to be really, really interesting and very lucrative for a number of people, probably companies don't even exist yet. So with that in mind, I'm trying to make sure that rather than be down at sort of base level and just sort of like just seeing what's going on, try to almost, sounds a bit mad, elevate up, look down, try and work out who's going to win, fast forward, who's going to be where in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Where can we fit into that environment? Where can we get as maximum commercial control of A, our destiny, but B, it's making sure that we can be one of the big, explosive, major players in this, and what I feel is going to be a massive interactive entertainment boom. So, yes, like the Navs, the Johns, the Ians, the board members that we're sort of aligning ourselves with, they're all absolutely massively helpful for the programmatic stuff. But where I'm seeing things at the moment and what we're hearing, there is enormous commercial opportunity. And if anyone who's been close to the esport landscape, for example, it's like the Wild West, and what this technology could do to that particular environment. There's enormous commercial opportunity. We want to make sure that we maximise our chance of getting as much of that as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to, you're going to E3, which is obviously known as the Electronic Entertainment Expo in LA, and when are you going to that? In the next few days, isn't it?
I fly out tomorrow.
Okay.
We've got the reason for that, we've got a couple of interesting meetings. So I would love to tell you who I'm seeing. I was trying to work out whether I should or not. So what I might do, I'll be quite up for doing a mid-event podcast with you, and I can actually tell you about some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Then I probably shouldn't, because I know some of the guys, some of our potential competitors are going to the event. I want to make sure they don't see the same people, you see. So we're flying out there. We've got some meetings over in San Francisco first. And there's a range of things we'll be talking about. There are interesting individuals. There are interesting companies. There are companies that there are a lot of good commercial alignment opportunities with that we'll be looking at. So we're going to go and do that, Francesco and I, and then we're going to go over to E3. We're flying over the UK team. I think there'll be about 14 of us over to make sure we get enough penetration onto the various different conferences, parties. We want to make sure we are absolutely everywhere. So I think we've got about 20-21 meetings set up. It's a pretty much a who's who of the gaming space, as you would expect.
Well, I can see the schedule here. You've got Google, EA, your Nintendo, Microsoft. That's just the first four on the schedule there. So that's amazing sort of names there. So I remember you at GDC, pretty much, I think it was just you and Fran, I think. I don't know if I'm right there, but you came back and you had quite a bit of news flow off the back of that. So I imagine now, even with these guys in tow as well, the guys you've signed up recently, some news flow is expected after that, surely.
Yes, I would say that yes, there will be, but it's not necessarily going to be straight after.
Yeah.
These things take a bit of time, and the big deals, the deals which we want to get over the line, the guys here are well aware there are. I hinted it last time. There's two big targets that we've got internally. Mm-hmm. One on the supply, one on the demand side. The supply one is coming along nicely. The demand one's coming along even nicer. So what we mean by that is game side,
yeah,
and advertiser side. So we are making sure that we will have something pretty interesting to say in Q3.
Cool.
In Q3, we'll have something pretty interesting to share, I'm sure. So it's just, I hope there'll be things to say even sooner because I'm massively impatient. But it would be good for us to share something pretty juicy in late summer.
Marvel stuff. Okay, let me just ask you one thing on the company. The share price has done amazingly well since you've listed, you know, back the end of last year, and what, well, 6 pence or something like that. Now it's like 28.5 pence, and some people are saying, but some people don't usually, in my mind, I think they're a bit under-researched and don't understand the potential of where you are, the sector you're in, and the big guys, you know, flying around there, and the money. Like I said, I didn't know how big gaming was until I saw, did some research, and I realized it's bigger than movies and music put together. You know, it's a massive market, and I look at other companies, research other companies, and their markets are nowhere near the size of gaming. But people often, detractors or under-researched, often say, oh, the bids are very, you know, they're overvalued now. What would you say to people like that who say that?
I read the forums, right? I see there are people who probably want to get in at a lower price.
Yeah.
I would say that we've been out to the States a few times now. The American market, particularly on the West Coast, really are very excited about what we are up to. If we were to achieve what I believe we can in terms of becoming the biggest media owner in the advertising side for the video game market, we would be worth, let's say,
multiple,
20 times what we are right now, right? And some. We are surrounding ourselves with the right people to make sure that we are opening the doors that we need to open to get to that goal. It's fair to say that since we floated up, I would say we were relatively wet around the ears about a year ago. We had a fair idea of where the company should go, but we were fairly wet around the ears. You could probably argue that, you know, Fran and I would say over a drink too that we probably could have got a higher valuation when we first floated up. Mm-hmm. But if I look at what we have internally now, if I see what we are achieving already with the resource we've got and the people who are coming in and what we have ahead of us, we are sitting on a potential monster if we execute. We're executing in a very thorough and detailed way. I would say that there are some people who like to invest in digging stuff out of the ground or hard materials, whatever it might be. Fair play to them. They're never going to get an enormous return unless they randomly strike gold every now and again, whatever it might be. Fair enough. You know, that's what they want to go and invest in. But these are the same people who would have avoided investing in something like a Facebook early doors or a Twitter early doors. Now, I'm not saying we're B2B, right? But we are creating a new ad category. If you fast forward 2, 3, 4, 5 years, there will be companies that will be in existence because of our existence. We'll be creating an entirely new industry. And because of that, the size in which that market will be, it is, and if you look at what the video game space has done already with just what is going to be looked back on in 2 years and go, it was relatively embryonic compared to where it's going to get to with cloud-based gaming. There is no doubt in my mind that right now we are undervalued based on what we are trying to achieve. So it would be fair to say that there would be a whole bunch of companies that would very much like to have BidStack within their portfolio in terms of would love to come and gobble this business up. But we've got our foot down the accelerator and we are continuing to make enormous progress. So I'm extremely comfortable with valuation. If anything, it should be going further north. Yeah. So I'm very excited, Justin. Very excited.
Yeah. Well, no, do you know what? I did say in a video that you know you're very good at forming relationships with people, but almost selling. You know, the I did say, you know, a good team, good tech as well. But listen, the people, you know, signing up to be advisory board members with you wouldn't do so unless they saw something in the company, because it's their reputation. These guys are well off anyway; they don't need to earn any more money. You know, their reputation's on the line, so they'll only go with something they see is going to be a winner, won't they?
Yeah. It's so I'd say that keep an eye out what's going to happen on Thursday. I would say this is not a case of suddenly telling people to go and buy our stock on Thursday, right? But it's if people are genuinely interested and genuinely are researching this market, I'm hoping, and I've definitely, you know, I do like a lot of our investors. I think that we've got some really, really good people, good human beings that back us, and include yourself in that, Justin, as well. It's like there's some good people who back the story, which makes me very happy. And it's very motivational for us, right? But if you were to look at what Google will show on Thursday, it's going to give the first hint at where this market, the cloud gaming market, could go to. It's quite clear why they're doing it. They're going to do this to try and steal Microsoft's thunder before they take to Sage in E3. It's pretty obvious. And you're going to find that the generic video game community are going to be quite skeptical about what Google are up to and what the cloud gaming services of xCloud, etc., are going to bring to the party. But if you look through it and you fast forward where this is going to go over the next few years, it's going to be remarkably exciting. And what I'd say is this, is if you look at the likes of like a Google Stadia can do, what an xCloud could potentially do, and when Amazon finally shut a hand and joined the party, what that will do. If you're stitching together what was a passive audience with a superhero, so if you think about a football match, or if you're thinking about a rock star, or if you're thinking about a movie star, where the audience is always passive, they're just watching. So with this new type of technology that is coming to market, where it's not reliant on what hardware you have at home, it's all based on what the cloud can do and the environments which they are created, all the loads being dealt with in the cloud, it will be possible to do environments where you've got 5 million players in one game at one time. It will be possible for an influencer to become stinking rich beyond even what the Ninjas and the PewDiePies are right now. Way, way richer by going, look, come and join my game. I'll charge you £5 for you to come and join my Fortnite Extreme, whatever the hell it ends up, that type of battle royale style games ends up going, that genre. And they could have 1 million people in the environment and make £4 or 5 million in an hour. That's the type of, that's the process we're about to go into. That's exactly what this industry is about to do to a whole bunch of individuals. So the smart people in and around the space, and we've surrounded ourselves with some pretty bright people, are looking at this going, right, it's almost blank sheet of paper time. You've got to ignore what's happened with the Xbox and the PlayStation and even in many ways, the smartphone market, and go, with this type of technology, where's it going to go? Where's the money going to come from? Who's going to win? Who do we reckon is going to win? And who do we reckon is going to lose in this environment? And how do we make sure we get at the companies that don't even exist right now that will probably end up being the zingers and the machine zones of this new type of technology? Because they're probably not even formed a company yet. So we've got to make sure we get at those people. That's part of part of the reason for building out the advisory board we've built out, is to make sure we can get at those type of embryonic businesses to make sure that we are fast forward 2, 3, 4 years, we are in a very, very strong controlling position of the entire market.
Yeah. And this it's amazing. The accessibility thing is amazing, because you imagine the average gamer, you know, is on a console. Now, if I said to you that my mother-in-law was addicted to Candy Crush, you know, because that's because it came on the smartphone, it's very easy to play. That kind of accessibility opens up a whole new audience, doesn't it? So, anyway,
yes.
Yeah. And like I said, I would never have my mother-in-law down as a gamer, but there we are. But okay, so one final thing quickly, because we had lots of information there. If you need to sort of summarize in 3 points, if people are not following the story, give them 3 quick reasons, Jane Watts, why they hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
I would say do some research into the people we brought on board in the advisory position in the last week. That's point one. Point two, the video game market is about to go through an overhaul. And point three, just keep your eyes on what's going to happen on Thursday. And the smart researchers amongst the investor community will be able to work out that we are positioned quite neatly in that new wave of video game and interactive entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff, James. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up when you're stateside.
We'll definitely do a podcast when I'm out there. I think I'll be able to give you a bit of a... What I'll probably do is I'll probably take control of our Twitter channel as well. personally, just so I can make sure that we're getting the right message across in terms of the real sort of meat that's going to be sort of in and around the event. So,
marvellous.
Yeah, we'll jump on, have a chat.
Excellent. Speak soon. Cheers, James.
Cheers, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, Chief Executive Officer of Horizonte Minerals. HZM is ticker there. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Good to speak to you again. How's things?
Yeah, good. And yeah, I mean, you're progressing well here. You've just said there's some news out from Vermelho, a good sort of high purity and cobalt and nickel sulfate. So we'll dig into the detail of that in a bit, Jeremy. Before we do, if someone's listening right now and they've never heard of you, just summarise what Horizonte is all about, please.
Yeah, so Horizonte is a AIM-listed development company. We're focused in Brazil. We've got two Tier 1 assets, the Araguaia Ferronickel project, which we're currently moving through to production, and the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project, which is the subject of the press release today.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So take us through it then, because, of course, cobalt, nickel, they're all part of this new sort of EV revolution that's going to play out over the next 5, 10, in fact, the rest of the time, to be honest, until we find alternatives, of course. But so you're in a good space here. So take us through, Vermelho, what's happening here, Jeremy?
Yeah, so just to refresh, we acquired Vermelho at the beginning of 2018. We saw the Vermelho asset as very significant in terms of adding value to our portfolio. And the reason for that is it was developed by the major mining company Vale. They'd spent over $200 million on it, and it's a very large, high-grade, scalable resource. And why it was so significant to us is that it's within trucking distance of Araguaia. So between Araguaia and Vermelho now, we have one of the largest 100% owned high-grade resources globally. And it means that between the two operating centres, Araguaia and Vermelho, we've got the potential to build a 40 to 60,000 tonne a year nickel business. So that's the background to the Vermelho acquisition. And the news we had out today was significant in terms of it means that we've been able to demonstrate the production of nickel and cobalt sulfate from the Vermelho project.
Excellent stuff. And you talk about sort of good grades here as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so absolutely. We produced high purity cobalt over 21%, which is the reference grade in the cobalt pricing market. And what all of this means is why it's so exciting for us is if we look at the electric vehicle market today, there's around 3 million cars out there today. And there's a big sort of variation of numbers. But if we looked at this 12 months ago, 2030 is the big sort of penetration point globally where we see electric vehicles becoming a major part of our transport system. And last year, that number was going to grow from 3 million to 30 million vehicles by 2030. And this year, there's new numbers out. These are a month old. And across all of the transport space, that number has increased to over 200 million EV units, which is a massive increase. Yeah. And in EV batteries, what do we use? We use nickel and cobalt. So that is why this result, the test work results from Vermelho, is a major step forwards for us. It means that we can produce battery-grade product from Vermelho.
Yeah, okay. And so now, what's next here?
So earlier in the year, we completed test work to show that we could produce ferronickel from Vermelho, which means it can be trucked to the Araguaia plant. Having now completed this cobalt and nickel sulfate test work, it means that also it can be a standalone plant and produce battery-grade product. The results of this test work will now run into the pre-feasibility that we have underway, and the aim is we'll be able to release a pre-feasibility mid-year showing robust economics for a standalone operation at Vermelho.
Yeah, and as far as Araguaia is concerned, how's progress there, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's good as well. I mean, obviously, it's a tough market at the moment. You've seen nickel prices have receded from the highs in February. We're making good progress on the project financing. We've got seven international banks as part of the finance syndicate for the debt. and we're now working on the offtake and obviously the other project financing pieces. So Araguaia is moving forwards well. And we aim to be in a position as we move into the second half of the year to start making announcements around the various pieces of the funding on the project.
I see. And it just goes to, I mean, it is a tough market at the moment. Like, it must be quite frustrating for you. And you know, when you come into this, it's a cyclical business, you know, commodities. And that's how you got these, you know, these assets at such a good price, because everything takes a hammering, doesn't it? And I mean, you've progressed these projects now. The value that you've demonstrated and unlocked, you know, is undeniable. But the share price is obviously in tune with that, leverage to that nickel price. So what's your thoughts? I mean, are the fundamentals still very good, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's extremely frustrating for us as the company, having taken Araguaia from a grassroots discovery all the way to the point of financing and being able to construct it. But as you said, I mean, the whole thing is geared and leveraged to nickel price. I think the underlying point here, which is important for listeners to focus on, is the supply-demand fundamentals for nickel are compelling, probably over and above serve any of the other commodity spaces. We've got robust demand, not only from the stainless steel market running at 5-6% a year. We've got this new massive drive on the EV battery side of the equation. And we've had LME inventories, which is the metal held on the London Metal Exchange and the Shanghai Future Exchange, now dropped to around 170,000 tonnes, which is its lowest level in the last 6 years. And then on the other side, the supply side, there's been really no new money flowing into the space to develop the next generation of mines. So it's exactly what you want. You've got strong demand, very few projects, very low inventory levels, and you will see pricing change in the short to mid-term. So we are one of the only projects globally that is construction ready with Araguaia, and I think we will see those valuation differentials kick in. Mm-hmm. The problem at the moment is we've got the US-China trade war, which really has put a cap on all of the resources. And obviously closer to home, we've obviously got the Brexit scenario, which means that the generalist market is somewhat stagnated. So yeah, it's a frustrating time for us when you can see the value, some major value drivers, and yet the equity space for junior miners is very tough. But that actually is the opportunity, because it just means it's a further period with more drawdown and no new money running into the supply side.
Yeah, so sooner or later, I'm assuming there'll be some kind of spike, won't there?
Absolutely. There will be a definite correction point, and we're running into the point where across both the two projects we've got some major value drivers. So there are definite value uplift points of this over the short to mid-term.
Yeah. And what's, at the moment, what's it like in Brazil at the moment? Obviously, there's a change of leader over there, and I've read, you know, it hasn't been as smooth as people had hoped. What's the thoughts? I mean, how is it? You're in the country itself. What's it like operating there at the moment?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's really business as usual. We've seen no real changes. We still are very comfortable operating in Brazil. Obviously, we're up in the north of the country, in the Pará state. We're moving through the permitting very quickly. The real has weakened, which obviously benefits us in terms of dollar spend in the country. And I think it's still a very good place to invest and develop mines.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Jeremy. Well, and so what, I mean, the next sort of big milestone would say is what?
So the next big milestone will be the pre-feasibility study on Vermelho, which we're expecting mid-year. Then we'll also have updates on the financing for Araguaia. And then as we move into the latter part of the year, we'll have additional updates as Vermelho advances beyond pre-feasibility. And we'd also have updates in terms of the various pieces around the funding for Araguaia. So it's going to be a very busy time as we run into the second half of the year.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Okay, one final thing, Jeremy, if someone's listening right now, not following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
I think absolutely. So number one is nickel market fundamentals are compelling. Going forwards, you are going to see nickel price climb, and we're a direct leverage to that price. So if you want to get exposure to nickel, we have two tier one assets that you can get exposure to. Number two, we've got a very strong shareholder base. We've got Teck, Glencore, JP Morgan, We've got a very strong register of institutional holders around the company, and we're funded. And number three, you're going to have some major milestones around these projects over the next 6, 12, 18 months as we move Araguaia through to development. So it's an exciting time, and I think a story definitely worth watching.
Marvellous stuff. Jeremy, good to talk to you, and like I say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Jeffries, Chief Executive Officer of Dev Clever Holdings. DEV is the ticker there. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Oh, hi, Jason. How are you?
So, well, in fact, do you know what? It's Justin.
Sorry, Justin. Sorry.
No, because you know what? I know what people do. They'll say, hello, Jason. They'll just take the piss rather than actually focus on the news. So, let's start again. Here you go.
Start good.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Jeffries, Chief Executive Officer of Dev Clever Holdings. DEV is the ticker there. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Oh, hi, Justin. How are you? Nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, you too. And you're keeping busy, fella. And you've got a very active company there with many parts to it. So, but this today, the news out is about Engage, part of your business. And we'll get into that in a bit. But just give us a brief overview of the company, if you could, Chris.
Yeah, of course. So we're an innovation tech business. Mm-hmm. We has been trading for just short of 6 years now. And during that time, we've been building proprietary platforms and products in the background in collaboration with customers. And we offer them in three channels, which we call Educate, and they're our educational products. Mm-hmm. Experience, which are our immersive products, and Engage, which is our proprietary gamification platform, which when we launched, late January this year, it was then all about delivering our big cloud-based infrastructures and looking at scaling our business on a much accelerated timeline.
Yeah, well, this is about an activity update on Engage.
Yes.
So just remind us again what Engage is all about and what's the update here. Take us through what's happening.
Yeah, so Engage is a proprietary gamification engine. And what that means in layman's terms is it allows a consumer to play a game in order to win a reward. And that process can be adapted to driving product sales, or it could be driving membership sign up, but ultimately what will happen is a brand will say, or a retailer will say, what we'd like you to do is purchase this product from us, and then we'll give you a chance to win a high value reward by playing a game after you've purchased your product. And what we've done, our engine completely controls that process seamlessly, so that not only are we able to identify that someone's purchased that product, so they qualify to play. We can then deliver the game on their mobile instantly, and they range from instant win games to skill-based fun games, and even gamified loyalty cards, like a stamp card, but with games included in it. And once they do that, they then play the game, and then if they win a high value prize, we can fulfill that prize digitally straight back to their phone, and that might be a high value shopping voucher, or it might be a trip to New York, in which case we'd send them a digital voucher onto their phone where they could go to any airline and spend it. The other thing that we give away, obviously, is we allow the brand or the retailer to promote additional sales or repeat purchases, because not everyone wins that big prize, unfortunately, but a lot of people will win a discount off their next purchase. And again, we deliver that voucher digitally, seamlessly to the user's device by using our partners who facilitate them vouchers. So again, the gamification engine really sits inside all of them kind of business systems that work together to create a great customer experience and a great incentive for a consumer to purchase a product, which is what a brand or a retailer really want you to do.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's the technology itself, it is making the shopping process fun, and it's driving people to purchase specific products. And it's, in terms of gamification, the market is exploding at the minute, and it's a marketplace that we identified 5 years ago, and we've been building the right systems which would enable us to launch them as a fully cloud-based platform which can be integrated seamlessly into any voucher issuer partner or any EPOS solution, electronic point of sale, a till system. So the more partners we bolt into our network, then the more reach Engage can offer that experience in different shops all over the world.
Yeah, and so like I say, it was only launched recently, to what, 12 weeks ago on March the 6th, but already I'm looking here on the RNS, you've got some big name clients there.
Yeah, so I mean, we've been working with a lot of big customers over the last 4 years, because again, what people mustn't confuse us with is a typical tech startup. What we've actually done is we've been building games in gamification for 4 years now. We've been working with blue chip brands and in small controlled environments, so where we can do a game in one shopper outlet or one specific shop to get the right customer feedback, the right feedback from our clients, the feedback from the retailer and the brands, so that we're able to perfect the process, mm-hmm. Remove all the barriers from creating a platform which is easily scalable. And so as a result, now we've deployed that system live and we are out there selling it. And we're already seeing great uptake from the brands that we've already worked with and introducing new brands every day. So it's really has hit the ground running and fast.
Yeah. And these big brands, I mean, there's Pepsi Max, there's J2O, Bosch, Juicen. I mean, so some of these people you've done, you've worked with, and the feedback from them, is it a recurring thing, or are they going to come back to you? Are they happy? What's the general feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of these brands that have are already, some of them are still live, some of them have just, we're only a short campaign. We're already scoping the next activation for them. So as well as rescoping repeat activations and more permanent activations, we're also receiving new RFPs or new requests for proposals from a host of such a wide range of diverse brands now, and they're coming in every day.
Yeah, and so as far as you're concerned, I mean, you know, you've launched this 12 weeks ago. Is it exceeding your expectations, Chris, at the moment?
Yeah, it really is doing. I mean, in terms of how simple it's been to working inside these retail infrastructures and operators, how quickly the brands have taken to what it is that we're trying to achieve, and then straight away we've been pushing games up left, right and centre, and already the results from some of them games that have come back have been absolutely staggering. There are games that have only been live for a couple of weeks, and you know, they've had hundreds of thousands of plays. It's the actual engagement process is huge. It's working fantastic in the market. Yeah. And we're now actually just in the process of building several more games for different brands as well, which will all be coming out over the summer. So our pipeline is getting bigger and bigger and bigger every single day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, gamification is so important, isn't it, to get brand loyalty, brand awareness. But how easy, I mean, is it easy for you to scale this up?
So this platform has been built specifically to scale. So we're focused entirely on my focus predominantly is building up partners. The more strategic partners that we can integrate directly into the Engage platform, the more shops and retailers it opens up across the UK, Europe and even the rest of the world. And then the more companies who work with coupons and vouchers that we can then partner with as well, it means that we can offer a far more diverse marketing campaign for brands, where they can target different types of customers in different shopping environments, whether it's go and buy one of our drinks inside a bar or it's go and buy a six pack of our drinks inside a supermarket. They can do it all from one place, so it minimizes the efficiency and it maximizes the exposure that a single campaign gets.
Yeah, okay. And looking forward, Chris, what's the next kind of big milestone you're hoping to achieve for the company across any one of the sectors there?
So, well, I mean, speaking specifically about our, because all three of our channels have got significant milestones, which we are close to achieving. Mm-hmm. Our Engage platform really now is pushing the next wave of partners through the system, which are going to open up some significant opportunities for the platform and put us directly into some major retailers all across the UK. But then it'll also give us the platform to expand into their territories overseas as well, because they've got customers all over the world. Our experience platform is very exciting right now, because we are weeks away now from deploying Vanguard, our competitive multiplayer cross-platform VR game. Mm-hmm. That's going to be launched in the app stores coming soon, the virtual reality version. And then our education product, I don't know if you've been keeping track of that, but we are, again, very excited about the uptake and the impact it's had initially. And again, our strategy there is to form a partnership, which we're in discussions with a global hardware provider, which will give us the platform to launch that on a far more accelerated basis. So dead exciting times. And considering we only launched Floaty the company 4 weeks ago, our products were already very mature, but now we've had the ability to put them into the cloud infrastructures and create the right internal resource to support each one as an individual. Our only real challenge right now is still recruiting people at the rate we need to in order to keep up with a lot of demand from these products.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Chris, well, listen, one final thing to do, and if someone's listening right now, like the sound of where you're at and what you're doing, how you're progressing this, but not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
So I think that DevClever is one of the most exciting prospects on the small cap market currently. I think that there is, me personally, I am, you know, the major shareholder who, I mean, I personally hold nearly 70% of the company, and I've got no intention of selling any of that anytime soon. And I think with all the positive stuff that's going on, people are going to see a big impact from Dev on all three channels and very soon.
Marvellous stuff. Chris, good to chat to you. And like you say, you've got a lot going on there. So no doubt plenty of news coming out very soon. And I look forward to catching up on that news in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Expediator, XPD, down at the moment 1.5%. At four, Bold Opportunities, BOU, down at the moment 4.65%. At three, Carelian Diamond Resources, down at the moment 11.6%. Are any of these companies being followed up at the moment? At two, Block Energy, just down a smidge there at 0.4%. Number one most followed company, again, top five. Wow. Do you know what? This may mean people are buying on dips, which is good. I always try and buy on a down day, you know? Try and see what's calmed down a bit. The RSI momentum has come off a bit. Dish down 3.95%, 7.3 pence there. That's Big Dish, of course, most followed company today. And yeah, okay, let's go to RNSs. Most liked RNSs. We have at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At 5. Ektech, investment in North Fork Community Power. At three, Active Energy Group, progress update on operations at Lumberton. At two, Xeros Technology Group, signs a first textiles GDA with garment manufacturer. And I'm going to do a video on that company because it's worth, I've held, it's a very rocky road at the moment, of course. Share price has been up and down, and I could have taken profit a while back, but I haven't. In fact, it came down and needed some... They did update. They express the need to raise further funds. And if you want to tank a share price, you do that. But I believe now that's priced in. But the news that they have, the JD they've signed, are with massive companies, huge, ginormous companies. And their tech is it works with the regulation at the moment. It's water scarcity. There's going to be a big problem with water over the next few years. In fact, there already is. And that's why regulations and legislation is heading towards tightening up of being more economical with water, and this company's tech plays into that space, and they've signed commercial deals with big companies. And I think at the moment, they said they can go into 2020 with the current cash they have, but they will probably need to raise, I think, probably a final fundraise towards the end of this year. And that's what people are worried about. I don't think it'll be done at this level. I think they announced in the RNS that they're going to be announcing more deals. So I think the share price should be above 10 pence where they raised last time. At the moment, it's 9.125. Anyway, number one, most like the RNS, Jeremy's on the podcast. Horizonte Minerals, high purity cobalt and nickel sulfate from Vermelio. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, if you got the app, you downloaded the app, the Vox Markets app, and you like it, it's free of charge, and you get some value from it, by all means, please, give us a nice rating and review at your app site. By the way, if you download the app, it's quite simple. Just follow a couple of companies, hit the follow button on some companies you want. You'll get free updates on them via RNS whenever they release. Plus, there's prices there, of course. It's not live prices. You can pay for that if you want to pay for that, but it's 15 minutes delayed. But I genuinely think it's the nicest, user-friendly, neatest-looking app out there at the moment as far as investment platform is concerned. So, and you can get it for free at the App Store. But give us a review if you download it. Thanks for that. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.